Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Well, first, the Middle East is on a knife edge this morning following Donald Trump's decision to bomb nuclear targets in Iran at the weekend. Israel says it has struck targets in western Iran this morning, and the AFP news agency has reported that loud explosions have been heard in Jerusalem after the Israeli military warned a fresh barrage of missiles was launched from Iran. First, let's go to Tel Aviv, where Irish journalist Paul Kearns is. Paul, good morning to you. I know you spent part of your morning in a bomb shelter. Take us through what happened this morning.
Good morning, Claire. Well, the first thing that happened, maybe to start at 3 o'clock in the morning, the sirens went off and we have to gather in the war room. The kids sleep in the war room in the apartment just east of Tel Aviv. So after that, I had actually a medical appointment in Tel Aviv, in the center of Tel Aviv. And I went to the doctors there. And while I was in with the doctor, we got notification that there was imminent rockets or missiles come. And luckily, they have a shelter. It was like a clinic. So they had a communal shelter. So everybody who was there just go down to the underground shelter or bomb shelter. And we stayed there for 30 minutes until we got notification to come out.
Mm-hmm. So you don't get much time then. Once the alert comes in, you have to more or less go straight away, do you, to a shelter?
You first get a piercing sound on your phone, and that tells you that the alarms will be coming maybe 5 or 10 minutes. But once the alarms, the deafening sirens come, you don't have more than 10 minutes to find shelter.
Right. And I suppose you, given your circumstances this morning, you weren't with your family when that happened, which is a worry, I'm sure.
Well, I guess this is the reality of life in a war situation, and it is in Israel. You know, you try to continue on as best you can, and you have to do things. I mean, the schools are closed, so the kids are at home. But you have to do, you know, various other commitments or have other various commitments. So the roads are pretty empty, but there's people about, and so you can be caught. Mm-hmm. You know, the war is 10 days old now. You can be caught without, you know, your kids being with you, which is a concern. So you can't contact, or it's difficult to contact sometimes when you're in the war shelter, and you have to find out, come up, and then everybody's scrambling to see what city was hit or what the, you know, the damage might have been.
I was just having a look there. That alarm sound that sent you and those who were with you to the shelters, it seems as though they were intercepted missiles, and the loud thuds that were heard were some shrapnel that were falling as a result of the intercepts. Is that what you understand, Paul, from this morning?
Well, on this occasion, I actually didn't check. I didn't know, but that's what happens. You know, the interceptions, the booms, they can be thunderous over your head, but they might be a kilometre or so away. And then one of the biggest risks is falling shrapnel. But lately, I'm sure Irish viewers have seen the damage when a missile is hit, and they're hitting now with worrying regularity. The damage can be devastating, and the number of deaths are pretty low because people have shelters.
Do you feel protected because the Iron Dome system is there? And in the main, it seems to be working.
Well, the Iron Dome system, without getting into the weeds, I think was taking down some of the Hamas rockets. The Arrow system is what takes the missiles from Iran. Obviously, Israelis, you know, feel relatively safe in the sense that there's a commitment or investment in that type of military infrastructure. 90% or so are taken down. But I guess they feel most safe because of the network of bomb shelters, communal and private homes that exist across the country.
Now, we have been told in official statements that 15 Irish citizens, Paul, and their dependents were successfully removed from Israel because they were offered the opportunity and they wanted to take that opportunity. Your plan, though, is to stay there with your family, is it? Who your family are Israeli citizens?
Yeah, no, I've no immediate plans to leave, to go across the border. I think the only way out now is to go across the border to Jordan. So we've no immediate plans to leave. I mean, we question all the time why we are here, but that's kind of a more medium or long term decision-making processes to stay or not to stay. But in the immediate term, we're helping it out.
All right. Well, Paul, we wish you well and thank you for speaking to us. And I hope we catch up again soon, and do take care there. That's Paul Kearns. Well, we're also joined by Middle East Bureau Chief with the LA Times, Nabi Boulos, who's in Lebanon this morning. Nabi, I see in the last few minutes that the Israelis are saying that they're striking the Iranian capital, Tehran, with unprecedented force. What are you hearing about what's happening right now?
So yeah, I mean, this has been actually a regular occurrence over the last few days, where in the morning, I guess, shows up with a large sort of attack from Israeli warplanes on targets in Tehran. But it also be said, I mean, the fact is that now we are in a sort of attrition situation between the two governments, where you know you have airstrikes on the one hand, and then the Iranians will lob, I guess, a ballistic missile barrage in response. And it's almost like that, really. I mean, that's been the rhythm for the last few days, where we have a sort of call and response with Israeli airstrikes and then a missile barrage from the Iranians.
Mm-hmm. And Sky News are reporting that there has been a strike now near the southern Israeli city of Ashdod. But it's worth noting that the geographical distance between Iran and Israel means that Iran is at a disadvantage here in terms of those missiles getting through, and they also have the Arrow defense system to contend with. Can you explain to us how that is working?
Also, it's a few factors, right? Now, for one thing, right, we're talking about a distance of about 800 to 900 miles. That's about, I guess, 1,000, it's about 1,200, 1,300 kilometers. So that means that the Iranians already have actually a smaller number of missiles that can reach that distance, right? We're talking about, that's not a large portion of their missile arsenal. So that's already a problem. Add to that, right, the fact that it takes about 12 minutes for these missiles to reach. They travel around Mach 5, I believe. And so that takes 12 minutes, which is to say that there is enough warning for the Israelis to actually mount a defense. Now, the multi-tier defense system they have actually involves actually many countries, not just one or two, right? You also have planes being scrambled in Jordan. You have American and French assets being scrambled in Iraq and elsewhere. And at the same time, of course, you have the Arrow missiles, right, which are used as interceptors for longer range stuff. And of course, the Patriot missiles for shorter range missiles that are also coming in. All which to say is that the Israelis have managed to actually create a fairly dense, a very defense network that has actually been able to intercept about 90% of missiles coming in, which is, you know, impressive.
Where you are in Lebanon, I mean, in previous conflicts between Israel and Iran, Lebanon was seen to be on the front line because you had the Iranian allies there, Hezbollah, firing rockets into Israel. But it's different now, isn't it? Explain to us how that dynamic is working.
Well, that's exactly so. The fact is that in the past, Iran could rely on groups like Hezbollah and others to actually mount some kind of a response to Israeli attacks. Indeed, I mean, the idea was for these groups to be the first line of defense against a prospective U.S. and Israeli attack. It's worth noting that because Lebanon is Israel's neighbor, that means that any missiles lobbed by Hezbollah, I mean, it would just take a few minutes to reach their target, right? Even less potentially if they're bigger missiles. So that was the major danger. The fact is that now that's gone, right? I mean, Israel has managed to cripple Hezbollah, at least in terms of its missile arsenal. And certainly there is no appetite among the leadership now to actually mount a proper missile response, right? A sort of missile barrage, because that would lead inevitably to a full-scale war against Lebanon one more time. And there's a fear of that right now, because the country is still reeling from the after effects of the last, bout of violence. And in fact, actually, just now, like where I'm standing right now in Beirut, I can hear an Israeli drone circling above. And again, that's a measure of the amount of surveillance that is being retained in this area, right? Israel is still monitoring the situation here. It's still mounting attacks. And there really is no chance for Hezbollah to react.
Mm-hmm. In the last few minutes, Israel is saying that it is attacking, as we speak, Iran's Fordo nuclear site. We know that that is the site, well, one of them, that the Americans had targeted over the weekend. So it seems now that Israel are coming in, dovetailing off the back of the American bunker buster and going in again with another attack this morning. That's hardly surprising, though, is it?
No, not at all. But the fact is that the assets used at this point, I mean, they might not be able to handle the kind of, I mean, they might not be able to mount the kind of destructive force needed to destroy a facility like Fordo. It's worth noting that we're not really sure what's happening in this regard right now, because at the same time, we don't know about the damage that was done from the American strikes, on Saturday. We still have no idea or any real battle damage assessment of what's been going on. Now, at the same time, right, Iranian officials have been downplaying the effect of those strikes in the past, right? They were saying that actually much of the material was moved ahead of time, and that in any case, they weren't able to penetrate the defenses because we were talking about a facility that's about 80 to 90 meters underground.
Mm-hmm. Nabi, we'll let you go. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm joined by Fawaz Gurgaz now, who is Professor of International Relations at the London School of Economics. Fawaz, thank you for being with us this morning. I'm just looking and I'm keeping an eye on what's happening. I mean, that news this morning that the nuclear site at Fordow is under attack again from the Israelis, and the Iranian leadership have a big choice to make now, don't they? I mean, they either respond in kind, as they have threatened to do, or they negotiate, which may ultimately mean that they give up their nuclear enrichment program, certainly their in-country nuclear enrichment program.
Well, I mean, I think for your own listeners, let's have clarity on what the United States and Europe and Israel want from Iran. They want unconditional surrender. They want zero enrichment of uranium on Iranian soil. They want Iran to give up its ballistic missiles. They want Iran to end any kind of relation support for its regional allies, the militias in Iraq, in Yemen, in Lebanon, and elsewhere. What the clarity your listeners don't get is that they really want Iran to be naked. They want to really make Iran, less sovereign, even though the Iranians for the past 40 years, they paid really high costs for challenging the United States and for trying to really become sovereign and develop a defensive capability. So Iran is pressed between a rock, the rock of full surrender, unconditional surrender, because the name, what you mentioned, diplomacy, is not diplomacy. It's really surrender. And the hard place of all-out war. Mm-hmm. My take on it, there's a third choice that the Iranian leadership is contemplating at this particular moment.
And what is that?
Historically, what we know about the Iranian state, Iran is very cautious. Iran is very calculating. Iran is a rational actor. It's subscribed to the doctrine of what's called strategic patience. That is, ultimately, they believe that what they need is time. They need to really take their time. And what the Iranian leadership are now at this particular moment, if I was sitting in a bunker in Tehran now, if I were Ali Khamenei, the supreme leaders, I have to weigh my options. I have to see, how do I respond to the American, attacks? And they will respond, make no doubts about it. But they will respond at their own choosing, at the time of their own choosing. I think it's going to be a limited response against the Americans. Because I think one thing we know about the Iranians in the past, really, several years, they have been desperately trying to avoid being dragged to war against the United States. Because Benjamin Netanyahu has been doing his best to drag the United States to war against Iran. So I think against the United States, you're going to have a limited response. How and when, I have no idea. But what you're seeing between Iran and Israel now, you're going to have a war of attrition. The Iranian strategy is to really try to bleed Israel by a million cuts because they cannot take on the United States. And as to really, and also what you're seeing now, the Iranian leadership, they're going to Russia. I mean, the Iranian foreign minister now is in Moscow meeting with Putin. They're going to go to China. They're going to try to get some help, at least to replenish their arsenal and get some defense capabilities. So they're counting on the fact that both Russia and China, probably China through Pakistan, could really somehow support Iran in the midterm in order to enable Iran mm-hmm. to resist for the long term.
Because they need that support, don't they? Because, well, the impression certainly that we're given is that it's a much diminished regime, particularly because of what has happened to Hezbollah and because the Syrian regime has changed as well. And that may be why Israel chose this moment to go ahead with the initial attack.
You're absolutely correct. Iran has never been as vulnerable as it is today. Iran's capabilities have been degraded. I mean, Israel and the United States have been able to kill Iran's top commanders, more than a dozen nuclear scientists. What really caught my attention yesterday during the Pentagon's press conference is that the top American general said not even a single shot was fired against the American, B-52 bombers. So what that tells me is that really Iran does not really have any kind of air power, defensive capability, air defense system. And that's very serious. And that's why you have Israel now bombing anyway at once. But here is what I'm going to say based on facts, that even though Iran's uranium enrichment or enrichment uranium infrastructure has been degraded, we have evidence, Iranian leaders have made it very clear, that weapons-grade enrichment supplies have been moved a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very important point to keep in mind, that Iran has enough high-grade weapons, high-grade enrichment, uranium enrichment, to build several bombs. And when I say about strategic patience, and when I say what we know about Iran, if I were in Tehran today, what would I say? What would I think? How do I build a credible, effective deterrence? And a credible, effective deterrence is a nuclear deterrence. And that's why, and I could be wrong, of course, I think I have no doubts in my mind, if I were a top Iranian leader, I will make a dash, a clandestine dash, to build a nuclear bomb and to really go the North Korean way, as opposed to go through the Iranian way, because Iran has failed, because it has not weaponized.
Mm-hmm.
That was the strategic mistake in the eyes of many Iranians that the Iranian leadership should have done a long time ago.
Fawaz, thank you very much for your time and your analysis. Fawaz Gurjez there, who's Professor of International Relations at the London School of Economics, and we'll bring you the latest on that story as we go through the morning. Also later, the inside story of Damien Duff's shock resignation as Shelburne manager at the weekend. But next, Michael Healy-Ray on why he's worried about the government's proposed Airbnb crackdown.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.